Almost hit me. Sorry, Jamie.
What are you doing, Doctor?
Just a spot of keepy uppy, Zoe. Keepy what? It's a game, Jamie. You have to stop the football from touching the ground without using your hands, see? I've already beaten my all-time record today.
And what was your all-time record?
5. No, oh, fiddlesticks.
Isn't there a more suitable room you could do that in?
Well, yes, but I need to keep an eye on the instruments and... Oh, 5... 6. Doctor! Ah, never mind. I'm sure there's no damage. Done?
You fractured the harmonic generator.
Oh my word. I need to do an emergency landing. hold on. Where are we, Doctor? Earth. Not that you'd recognise it, Jamie. I think even Zoe would struggle.
It's even bigger than the city. The buildings. So tall.
Zoe was right. You looked up and you could hardly see the sky. I couldn't even be sure that what I could see was the sky. It looked like nighttime, but maybe it was just the side of a great black building stretching way over our heads. The only light came from lampposts. The TARDIS was parked in the shade of a great high wall with walkways all the way up it. The ground was covered in cracks and odd bits of rubble and old rubbish. The city is called Tremesis.
Are you sure you don't mean it was called Tremesis?
Yes, it looks deserted.
Yes, well, perhaps it is. I'm afraid I don't know anything else about it, except that it's somewhere in what used to be Switzerland. The TARDIS just needs to check itself for faults, and then we can...
Nighttime is dangerous. Stay in your homes.
Oh. The voice came from a man standing on a podium in between the buildings. He was a kindly-faced old chap, like a nice uncle.
Well, he wasn't there a minute ago.
This has been a piece of friendly advice.
He added, and disappeared. The doctor went over to the podium to have a look. Ah, a hologram projector. We must have activated it by... Oh, my word! Before Zoe or I could react, a woman leapt out from behind the podium and grabbed the doctor. I pulled my dirk and brandished it at her, but she pulled out a knife of her own and held it to the doctor's neck. Give us the weapon or I'll kill him. I dropped my dirk and I kicked it across the floor towards her. She put her foot on it. Her boots were battered like the rest of her clothes, faded and patched up.
Why are you here?
She asked.
We're just visiting.
Nobody just visits at this time of night. What's that blue box? Some new kind of hawker?
What?
You must be from the state. Nobody else has equipment like that.
It's our travel machine. It developed a fault. We came here by accident. Carefully, the woman reached down and picked up my dirk whilst keeping her knife on the doctor.
I can't afford to stand out here yapping to you. They're probably already sending a hawker after me, aren't they?
We don't even know what they are. She pointed at an alley between two buildings.
You're coming with me, that way.
I think we'd better do as she says. But before we got to the alleyway, things started changing. The first things I noticed were the people, fading in like ghosts all around us.
Jamie, what's happening?
Can you see them too?
Of course I can see them.
Then I noticed the buildings. The old, crumbly, grey ones were still there, but I could also see these other buildings that were the same shape, sitting in the same place, but clean and bright, and all in blues and greens, like the sea. And above us, between the buildings, I could see bridges. And over the bridges, there were wee trains shooting back and forth. And it was another world, another kind of place altogether, but the same shape as this one. And somehow, I could see them both at once. And then, The other place was gone.
Doctor, did you see it too?
Yes, Zoe. The woman laughed. Maybe you're not statesman after all, if you've got nostalgia sickness.
What do you mean, nostalgia sickness? Before she could say anything else, Zoe pointed across to the other side of the square, the direction we'd just come from.
Where's the TARDIS?
Oh, no. Has it taken off without us?
Doctor, I told you we would damage the console.
Come on, move, said the woman. She walked us to a lift, pressed the button, and we waited.
What's that noise?
Oh, no, said the woman, jabbing her finger at the lift button.
What is it?
The lift got there, and we all pelted inside. I saw a shadow on the wall, a long way down the passage as I went, but I couldn't make it out.
Hawker,
the woman explained. I won't see any more. She still had the knife held to the doctor's throat.
What's your name?
Louisa Petzl.
Delighted to meet you, and you live here, do you?
Where else is there? The door's open, a few floors down from where we'd been before. We must have been some way underground. Miss Petzl marched us down a wide tunnel to a big glass door. We waited a moment, and then the door opened. We walked into a messy room, all full of chairs and tables and screens and computers. There were piles of junk pushed up against some of the desks and walls. In the corner, there was a circular bench with a table in the middle, and a dozen people were having a meeting. Like Miss Petzl, they all wore mismatched, patched-up clothes.
You're late, Louisa,
the oldest of them said. Then he looked up and saw us.
Who are these people?
Miss Petzl stepped forward, finally taking a knife off the doctor's neck. Although a couple of the people who had been sitting at the table stood up and brandished swords at us, in case we got any ideas. And Miss Petzl told them the whole story. When she was done, the ones who were sitting round the table talked about us. One said we didn't look like we were from the state. Someone else said maybe that was what they were supposed to think. Another said the way we'd come here wasn't very stealthy. And another said maybe that was what they were supposed to think. That was the way they talked, on and on, never deciding on anything.
Please, we don't know anything about your city. We're travellers, and we came here by mistake.
Where from?
The oldest said. I worked out his name was Neenan.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, though you may not believe it. we travel in time and space. My young companions here both come from Earth's past.
Nobody said anything for a few moments. Then someone said our story was so ridiculous it had to be true, and someone else said maybe that's just what they were supposed to think.
You think we're from your state, don't you? So why are you afraid of us? What have they been doing?
Apart from the way they run the city down, stolen from us, lied to us, you mean?
Asked Neenan.
They've been taking people away. Anyone who speaks out against the regime or wants to change things, they take them who knows where.
Well, perhaps I can help you find out.
Help us? You want to help?
Everyone around the table laughed, except one person, the youngest of them by my reckoning. She was dark-skinned and pretty, with colours in her hair which stood out against all the drabness. She asked,
How?
Tell me how it happens.
The woman with the colours, Oakley her name was, explained. You could tell who was going to be taken, because first they got the nostalgia sickness. People started seeing the city like it used to be, back when things used to work. And after that, it might take a few hours, it might take a few weeks, but they all got taken away by the hawkers.
You mean that thing we heard back there?
Mr. Neenan was alarmed.
You saw one tonight?
He looked at Miss Petzl.
Yeah, but it was six floors up. It couldn't have followed us here.
Mr. Neenan didn't seem any less worried.
They use a transmat system. It's all over in a second and they're gone.
Can you help, Doctor? Miss Oakley asked.
Don't get your hopes up, Tilda,
Mr. Neenan said.
I know you want to find Paul, but you can't get carried away because a group of strangers just want to...
Excuse me, but I'd like to get started if you don't mind.
Actually, the Doctor didn't care if they minded or not. He stood up and walked away, giving his most charming smile to the people with swords as he went. I exchanged a look with Zoe, and the two of us followed him into a corner filled with consoles and computers and screens. He blew some dust away and flicked a wee switch. The citizens around the table muttered to each other.
I don't think they like him messing about with all this stuff.
I'm not sure they even know what it is. It doesn't look like anyone's used it in years.
I think you're right, Zoe.
Is it broken, Doctor?
None of that stuff works, Neenan butted in. You're wasting your time.
Ah, good. A picture appeared on one of the screens. The Earth. I remembered the first time I'd seen it, standing on the surface of the moon with Ben and Polly, and they had to explain to me what it was. But all the seas were bigger, and the countries looked sort of skinny. I looked for Scotland. It was hardly even there. What's happened, Doctor?
An environmental catastrophe.
You're saying you didn't know about the flood?
Neenan said.
They did predict something like this in my time, but nowhere near this bad.
Tremesis was founded during the First World Flood, Miss Oakley chipped in. The second was much worse. There are small settlements dotted around, but Tremesis is the last inhabited city in the world.
This looks like military equipment.
Yes. This room, I think, was part of a military outpost. A lot of the equipment seems to have been stripped out. But this must have been an activity monitor. Monitoring what?
Present, nothing.
Zoe, do you think you could get this back online for me?
I can try, but the technology here is rather ahead of my time.
Oh, fancy that.
Yes, well, I'm sure you'll do splendidly. Now, cities like this need to ensure that all transport activity is monitored so they don't have any unauthorized guests. It should be able to trace where everyone's going.
What will you be doing?
Miss Oakley, where did you last see this Paul? Take us there.
Who is he? Husband? Father? Brother?
Husband, said Miss. Mrs. Oakley. He got the sickness a couple of weeks ago. He vanished last night.
Were you there when he disappeared?
No, I was kicking myself because we'd said we'd watch out for each other. You see, I've got it too. I've always said we should watch over everyone who gets the sickness. So when the hawkers come, we're ready.
But people don't do this.
No. People don't like to spend time around people with the sickness.
Is it contagious?
We don't know. Probably not. People just don't like to see people with it. It makes them think about it happening to them. Anyway, I'd gone to speak to Neenan. We'd been told to stay away from the meeting because of the sickness. But I had some issues I wanted to raise on our behalf, so I came to see him beforehand. Paul decided to stay at home. When I came back, he'd gone. Since we'd last been outside, the city seemed to have woken up. Some of the shops were opening. We attracted some funny looks. They could tell we were outsiders. We saw that old man again. The one on the podium. A different podium. They seemed to have them all over.
We're turning the corner,
he said. Nobody seemed to be listening.
How many people live here?
About 4 million, I think. Used to be more, Mrs. Oakley said.
We haven't seen a lot of people since we arrived.
Well, that's partly because nobody goes out at night, except people like us. But a lot of people never go out at all. Most people don't have jobs. I never have. When I was young, my dad programmed sea harvesters. Wish I had his talent for it. We stopped next to a wall, which had a row of balconies all the way up it. There was a lift at the end of the balconies, which didn't work anymore. Now they got up and down with ladders. Her flat was 3 floors up. Mrs. Oakley waved her hand in front of a panel at the side of the door. Nothing happened. She waved her hand again, and again. Eventually, she pulled the panel open, entered a long code on some buttons inside, and the door opened. Her home was small and littered with electrical junk. This stuff is Paul's, she explained. He gets us some extra money by fixing things for people, so he collects spare parts. She moved a box of wires and cables out of the way with her foot. I don't know what I'll do without him.
So, you left him here, and there's no sign of a struggle, so he must have gone out of his own accord. But what made him leave when he did? Look, this handheld computer he was fixing is almost finished.
Maybe he went out looking for a part.
No, Jamie, it's just a case of making a few simple connections and then closing it up again. Ah, there. And he's left a half cup of tea, look.
So the question is, what made him leave?
Who else lives along here?
The flat on this side is empty, she said.
The one on the other side, an old guy lives there. He keeps himself to himself. Well, let's ask him, shall we, if he saw anything.
Go away,
the man on the flat next door said. We told him it was important and refused to leave, and eventually he did come to the door. He opened it.
What do you... Oh, no!
And then he slammed the door in our faces. Oh, well, what a rude man. And then we turned around and saw what he'd seen. A huge metal bird flying straight towards us. Oh, my word! Hawker, get down! Shouted Mrs. Oakley. We ducked, and the thing slammed into the railing that ran along the balcony. It dropped down, but there was no crash. All we could hear were people in the street below running for cover. And then it rose up again.
Run!
We ran past Miss Oakley's flat. She tried to open the door, but it was jammed again. The metal bird perched on the railing and swung its wings at us, just missing us by a couple of inches. I pulled her away from the door, and we carried on running. We pelted down the ladder as fast as we could. Mrs. Oakley got to the bottom first and started to run. The doctor and I were all set to follow, but the bird swooped by, catching the doctor a glancing blow on the head. He fell, and I was below him, so he fell on me. Oof! Oh! Luckily, we were close to the bottom, so we were just winded and bruised. We got to our feet and looked up and down the street. We saw Mrs. Oakley waving to us and pointing at a tunnel, showing us the way to go.
Come on, Jamie.
Where did that flying beastie go?
I don't know, Jamie. They seem to be robots, which begs the question, who's controlling them?
But just then, the great bird swooped out of the shadows of an alleyway, rose up in the air and dived down right at Mrs. Oakley, just a few feet away from us.
No!
The bird stopped moving a few inches above her head. Then it shifted and changed. All its pieces moved around and suddenly I wasn't looking at a bird, but I was looking at a box. And Mrs. Oakley was inside the box. What can we do, Doctor? It was too late to do anything. Through the small gaps in the surface of the box, we saw a quick flash of light. And then the cube turned back into a bird and flew away through the gap between the buildings. We walked over to where Mrs. Oakley had stood and there wasn't anything there. Just a perfect square where all the dust and litter had vanished. Oh. Come on, Jamie. The doctor managed to retrace our steps back to the old military outpost where the citizens were still talking about whether to trust us or not. Of course, they wanted to know what had happened to Mrs. Oakley, and when we explained, they all looked at the doctor and me even more suspiciously than they did before.
We didn't do it. We're trying to help.
Yeah, Jamie, ignore them. We're going to get to the bottom of this whether they want us to or not. They looked like they didn't want us to. People were saying they never should have let us go off alone with Mrs. Oakley. Miss Petzl and a couple of the others were holding swords and they stepped towards us. I stood on my guard. But then, all of a sudden, a voice came from amongst the computers in the corner.
Doctor, come and look at this.
Hey, good work. Just the distraction we needed.
You might not say that when you find out what it is. I couldn't get the Transmat scanner working, but other parts of this equipment are operational. And, well, look.
There was still the picture of Arthur on the screen, but it was smaller. And the rest of the screen was all covered with lines and bits of writing. A wee dot glowed orange. A line of dashes came from the dot and headed towards the earth.
Oh, my word.
Something's coming towards us.
Yes, Jamie. A meteorite. How long to impact?
5 hours and 23 minutes. It's heading for what used to be the Alps.
But nobody lives there now, right?
No, but the impact will still be enormous. The tremor alone could be enough to destroy the city. And if it doesn't, it'll throw up a dust cloud which will choke everyone in its path and block out the sun.
The doctor turned to the citizens.
What sort of defences do you have against this?
You don't know,
said Neenan, as if it was ridiculous that we might think they would.
We're not in charge here. You do realise that, don't you? We're just concerned citizens.
So, I think it's up to us. Oh, what a hopeless bunch. If the TARDIS had still been around, I'd have suggested we all get back in and leave them to it. But it wasn't, and even so, the doctor would never agree, and he'd be right.
We can still stop it.
We can.
But we need a missile or a laser, and a powerful one, too. More powerful than the laser we had on the wheel.
What can we do, Doctor? They're the only people in this city who seem to have any kind of working advanced technology are these statesmen of yours, the ones who are operating the hawkers.
The state? You don't think they'll help?
Said Mr. Neenan. How do we contact them?
We can't. We never have.
Well, do you even know where they're based?
No. You're a fool if you expect them to do anything.
But everyone in the city's in danger.
We've only got your word for that,
said one of the others. A couple more agreed and said it sounded like another one of the stories the state put around to distract everyone from what was really going on.
Oh, for pity's sake! You and your city are on the brink of destruction, and you're just going to wander away?
Oh, come on, Doctor. We're wasting our time here.
Yes, I quite agree.
Zoe stayed behind to track the meteorite's progress. We headed down the tunnel that led back to the lifts. The Doctor still had that handheld computer he'd picked up in Mrs. Oakley's flat.
Yeah, there's so little information. These people seem to have lost everything useful. Look, these maps only show fragments of the city.
Useless.
I don't understand how it's degraded so much. It's as if people have given up.
Jamie, Doug!
There were three hawkers this time. They zoomed over our heads and back the way we'd come. Did they not see us?
Or were they looking for someone else?
Zoe! We were about to chase after them, but suddenly a truck appeared, just fading into the air in front of us out of nowhere. It was moving in our direction, and I had to yank the Doctor out of the way before it rolled over us.
Oh, thank you, Jamie. What's it doing down here? I think it's a cleaning vehicle.
It was that nostalgia sickness again, making us see things from back when the city was properly looked after. It probably couldn't have done us any harm, since it wasn't really there.
Oi!
Said the driver as he jumped down from the cab. Andy looked angry. Come on! We started running towards the rebels' meeting room again. I knew I could go faster than the Doctor, so I didn't wait for him. I glanced over my shoulder and he wasn't far behind. The truck had disappeared too. Now, I didn't know what we could do against these creatures, but I just kept running and hoped that when I got there, I'd think of something, anything. Some people ran past me the other way. I looked to see if Zoe was one of them.
Zoe! Zoe!
Nothing. Then, one of the hawkers swooped through the half-open door, its great metal wing shattering it on the way through. It didn't even seem to slow it down. I dived to one side, covered myself in the falling glass, and then watched as it sailed away after the people who had just escaped.
Look out!
I couldn't hang around to help or give them any more warning. I had to find Zoe. One of the creatures circled around the high ceiling. Most of the citizens had retreated back to their corner or were too scared to move. The other hawker that was still in here had turned into that box thing and I could see the light glowing out. It was taking someone else. I picked up a chair, ran at the box and battered it. Oh, it made no difference. The light faded, the creature unfolded and flew back down the corridor. So did its friend. I looked around the room. Then I raced over to the corner where Zoe had been working, hoping I'd find her ducked down behind the console. But there was nothing. Zoe had gone. There was only one way in and out of the room. If she'd got out, I'd have seen her. So she must have been taken. I went back out to look for the Doctor. He'd been right behind me when we were running, so where was he now? Did the hawkers get him?
Oh! Jamie! Come and help! I've got one of them trapped in here.
The Doctor was standing next to a lift, pulling wires out of its control panel. Poking out from between the doors was a hawker's wing. It thrashed from side to side, trying to free itself.
How on earth did you manage that?
I'll explain later. Putting these wires together short circuits the doors, but it keeps repairing itself. You take them and touch them together.
You should.
Look, just do it gently. The doors of the lift juddered and crunched the wing of the hawker. The wing fought back, but the doors held firm. Keep touching them together every 5 seconds while I look for the earthing cable. No.
Oh, hurry up, Doctor.
The doctor pulled out his sonic screwdriver, opened the bottom end of it, and wedged one of the cables in there. Now, I just have to reverse the settings. He stepped closer to the thrashing wing of the hawker and jammed his sonic screwdriver into a gap between the sheets of metal. Dead? It wasn't alive. Not really. But it's safe. You can let the doors open. Right, now, perhaps I can work out where it's been controlled from.
Oh, no, that's what I came to tell you. Zoe's gone.
What? Oh, right. Then I should get to work. The doctor sat down by the fallen hawker and pulled his sonic screwdriver out of it.
What did you do to it?
Well, Jamie, the sonic screwdriver can connect to most types of technology when it needs to recharge. I used it to suck all the power out of our friend here, and to avoid blowing the battery, I earthed it with a power cable from the lift.
He used the sonic screwdriver to start taking the hawker apart, piece by piece. All the sheets that made up its body weren't connected by nails or screws or wires. They just seemed to stick. I couldn't see how the creature changed from one shape to another. Some of the citizens caught up with us, and then they just stopped and stared at the doctor.
What are you doing?
Asked Mr. Neenan.
Trying to find out more about it and where it comes from.
But how did you catch it?
Asked Miss Petzl.
We trapped it in the lift. We're going to go to your statesmen, make sure they do something about this meteorite, and get Zoe and Mrs. Oakley and the others back.
You know,
said Miss Petzl,
right after Zoe found out about the meteorite, she got taken. It's as if they decided she was dangerous.
Aye. And then they sent one after the doctor, too.
Oh, I bet they heard everything,
said another man.
They want to stop us finding out what these people are trying to tell us.
And in a few minutes, they went from thinking we were state agents to talking about us like we were heroes. Oh, it was mad. But I wasn't going to point that out.
Aha!
The doctor held up a piece of dismantled hawker. He had found a panel on it that slid back. He touched a finger to the space underneath, and a stream of letters and numbers came up.
Ah, yes, I think I can use this to get inside its programming. And that means...
There. I've traced the control signal back, and it has its own map. Well, we can head off immediately.
You can count on our help, Doctor,
said Miss Petzl. The doctor looked up with a wee smile on his face, pretending to be surprised.
Oh, how nice.
Mr. Neenan wasn't keen, though, so he sloped off home and took a couple of them with him. But that still left 9 of us. Miss Petzl lent me a sword, a blunt and tarnished old thing. These people obviously didn't know how to look after them, but I didn't say so.
Yes, I'm hoping they won't be necessary.
He showed me the map. The control signal was coming from a building right at the top of the city. We got a few looks from other citizens on our way through. People started following us to ask what was happening. A lot of them joined us. The group went up to 20, and then about 30. We went past another of those podiums with an old guy in it.
Everyone is essential. Together we can build the future.
Everyone shouted and jeered at it. We walked through a passage under a massive grey building, up 2 flights of stairs, and came out in a round chamber in the middle, bigger than any space I'd seen in the city until now. A great long tube stretching upwards. There were lifts around the side. Somewhere up there must have been a ceiling, but it was too dark to see. In the middle of the chamber, there was an old statue of a man and a woman facing each other. The woman's arms had broken off and
sawed the man's head. The man was holding his hand up to her, his palm facing outwards, like he was telling her to stop doing something.
Here we are.
The doctor pressed a button to summon a lift.
Access denied. Then we'll have to cheat a little bit.
The doctor got his sonic screwdriver out and was about to start taking the control panel to pieces when...
Look out, everyone!
We scattered across the chamber. The hawker swooped down and flew around the crowd, just above our heads. The doctor was still working on the lift. The hawker went round once, then came back to the centre and headed right for him.
No!
He didn't have time to run. The hawker struck fast. It changed its shape in midair and clamped itself onto the wall and floor around the doctor. I'd already set off across the chamber and was halfway there when the light started to build. I wedged the sword Miss Petzl had given me hard into the biggest gap I could find, making sure it pointed away from the middle where the doctor was. The light faded, and I thought I'd done it. But then it started to rise again. I turned the blade, prizing the pieces of the creature apart.
Don't just stand there. Help me!
Miss Petzl pulled out her own blade and found another gap to wedge it into. She copied what I was doing, turning the blade, putting pressure on the hawker. Soon, everyone with a blade was helping out, finding weak spots in the metal, about a dozen swords and knives sticking into it at all angles.
Keep pushing, everyone!
The ones who didn't have a blade joined in by helping other people with theirs, twisting and pulling or pushing, opening up the gaps in the creature. The strength of more than 30 people was working to break this thing. We did it! The pieces fell to the floor, and most of us fell to the floor with them. Standing in the centre of all the mess was the doctor.
Thank you.
Then he picked something up. I realised it was one of the hawker's legs.
Aha. Well, how does that help?
It's a sort of interface. Look. He touched the severed leg to the control panel on the lift.
There we are. Now, will we all fit? I think there's enough room if we...
The doctor tailed off, because he could see what I could see. Other people had appeared around us. I could see them getting in and out of the lifts, talking urgently, hurrying places. The statue in the middle of the chamber was all in one piece. It looked new. There were four figures, two men and two women, each holding an arm out. And between their hands, the four of them held a metal globe. And then, on the other side of the room, I saw someone from behind who looked just like... No, it couldn't be Zoe. I kept watching, hoping she'd turn around. But she was gone.
The sickness again?
Miss Petzl asked.
Aye.
A few others in the crowd had had it too. They looked worried. Some of them had just had it for the first time. They'd sent one hawker after the doctor. But what if they sent enough for all of us? Could we cope with that many?
Come on.
They all picked up their swords and knives and we trooped into the lift. Will this take us right up to where the hawkers are being controlled from?
Yes, Jamie. We'll have to be on our guard, though. We don't know what we'll walk into. Hey, there's nobody here.
Yeah, don't be too sure, Jamie. They may be waiting to catch us unawares.
We were in a large hallway with a desk in the middle. Through the dirt street windows, I could see the sun for the first time since we landed here. The floor here had a carpet, very worn and faded. On both sides of the desk were doorways with no doors.
Let's split up.
I led half the group through the doorway on the left, and the doctor led the other half into the doorway on the right. As we walked through, we found more rooms, desks and chairs and computers. Still, no sign of anyone.
Look in all the rooms. As soon as you find anyone, shout for the rest of us.
There were another three floors above us, and nobody in any of them. We worked our way to the other side of the offices where we bumped into the doctor's group outside a set of double doors. We could hear voices coming from inside.
Anyone your side?
No.
Have you checked in here yet?
I was just about to.
I put a hand on one of the doors and the doctor put a hand on the other. I nodded to him, he nodded back and... We pushed. We walked into what looked like a small theatre. One of those ones where the actors stand in the middle. There was room for a couple of hundred people to sit, but right now there are only five, plus one standing in the middle, who stopped talking and turned to look at us.
"What are you doing here?" she asked.
"We're looking for you, Mrs. Oakley.
You know these people?"
asked an older man who sat in a large seat on the front row. He didn't look impressed as we joined Mrs. Oakley in the middle.
"They can't just come up here and interrupt official business."
"Wait, you mean this is the state?"
"Yes," she said. "And what do they want with you?"
"They want me to join them."
"But we thought they took people away to get rid of any opposition."
"No, no,"
said another statesman who introduced himself as Beaton.
"Quite the opposite. We look for people with energy and determination, and we bring them into the fold."
"But then why all the secrecy? Why not just come along and ask them nicely, or send them a letter?"
"Nobody would trust it. Before we were brought here, we all thought the government was bigger than this, but more powerful, manipulating our lives in ways we couldn't see. But the truth is this."
"Ah, so you send the hawkers to kidnap people."
"We know the hawkers can be a little too determined. They were designed for a different purpose. Nobody knows how to reprogram them, but they're all we have."
"Yeah, but if you're running a city that's effectively the capital of the entire world, shouldn't there be rather more than six of you?"
The older man got angry at this. His name was Fisk, and he launched into a great long rant about how much he'd done for us and how it wasn't easy doing his job when people kept disappearing, which was when I butted in.
"Ah, but people only disappear because you make them, don't you?"
"Some do," said Mrs. Oakley. "But most of them don't. My husband, Paul, he's not here. They say he never was."
"And Zoe?"
Mrs. Oakley shook her head.
"And then the ones who come up here eventually, they disappear too."
Then where does everyone go?"
"If we knew that, we would do something about it,"
bellowed Mr. Fisk.
"But if you control the hawkers..."
"It isn't the hawkers."
Mr. Fisk stood up. He was shorter than I expected.
"We use the hawkers to bring people here. The others just vanish."
"It does seem to be true,"
Mrs. Oakley said.
"The people they're targeting are all people who suffer from nostalgia sickness. But the state hasn't been causing the sickness. They just target people who they think can help. The sickness is just a coincidence."
"Well, I'm not a great believer in coincidence. If you're targeting forward-thinking people and they all have the nostalgia sickness..."
"But there are many other people who we'd never target,"
said Mr. Fisk.
"And they get the sickness too."
"Aye, but if people really do just vanish without the hawkers doing it, wouldn't somebody have noticed?"
"Yes, well, remember, Jamie, everyone stays away from people when they've got the nostalgia sickness."
"We've tried to find them,"
said Mr. Fisk.
"They're nowhere on the planet. They're nowhere within transmat range."
Yes. I'm sure you've been doing all you can, but we do have a rather more pressing problem."
They all looked at him blankly.
Which you know nothing about. Oh dear, said Anna. I'm sorry to have to break it to you, but..."
And the doctor explained about the meteorite. He'd brought the data from the other computer with him, and they checked what he was saying was right. "We'd hoped they'd swing into action. Call the military, arm the meteorite-seeking missiles, raise the force field. But they did nothing."
"Do you have something that might destroy it or knock it off course?"
Mr. Fisk shook his head.
"The official salvation operation stripped this place before they left Earth."
He walked around the members of his council, shaking their hands and thanking them for all their hard work.
"What? That's it? You're giving up?"
Mr. Fisk walked over to me.
"You know, I'm rather relieved. This place is finished anyway. Our ancestors should never have let themselves get stuck here. I just hope the ones who vanished went somewhere better."
Good grief. I've never heard such a load of defeatist, self-pitying..."
The nostalgia sickness was coming over us both, and I could see all the statesmen had it too, except Mr. Fisk. They could see what we could see. A full chamber, standing room only.
"Jamie, Doctor."
We turned round, and Zoe was standing right in front of us.
"Zoe?"
She was carrying a long, thin box with a handle with all wires and electrical bits coming off it. It looked like one of the doctor's mash-ups. She adjusted the controls.
"I think it's stabilizing, but I don't know for how long."
"What's stabilizing?"
"The convergence of the two cities. Hopefully long enough for us to talk. What are you doing up here?"
We've been trying to warn the city's leaders about...
The meteorite? I'm afraid they're not equipped to deal with it. We are, but...
Where are you, anyway?
Still in the city.
How can you still be in a city?
She means she slipped through into a parallel dimension, Jamie.
No, both the cities are in this universe, but they both exist on the same spot.
How?
A few decades ago, a group of engineers here tested something they called a sympathy engine. The idea was that it would influence the environment and help shape the city into what people wanted it to be. But the city is on a temporal fault line, and this engine seems to have tapped into it. It's created two different versions of the city, one trying to go forward, one stagnating. And the first to cross over into the other version were the engineers. So there was nobody to warn the ones left behind about what had happened.
I see. The fracture has been driven by people's perception. People either belong in one version of the city or the other. But people have kept on going over.
Yes. Every time someone starts to think about changing things or making things better over there, that's when you start to see into our side.
What everyone here calls the nostalgia sickness.
People thought they were visions of the past.
Yeah, but they're not. They're glimpses of a better present.
Yes. And eventually you cross over for good.
I see. The state on this side thought they'd spotted everyone who could be useful in solving the city's problems. But it seems they were too limited in their thinking. Everyone who had the nostalgia sickness got it because they had some idea about changing things. Any of them could have been useful. Zoe, you say you can knock out that meteorite?
We have the equipment, but we can't affect the world outside the city.
Why not?
We're not real enough. Most people still live on your side. That makes your side the real city. If we could get more people here...
Then you could blow that thing up.
We think so.
But if not, you'd be okay, wouldn't you? I mean, the other city.
I wouldn't bank on it.
Then we have to convince more people to cross over. How do we do that? Simple, Jamie. They just have to believe in a better world. They're stuck in this down spiral because nothing improves here. And that discourages them from trying. But they can be better. If the city doesn't get shaken to pieces by that meteorite... Yes, well, quite. Our first step must be to get access to their communications channels. We must prepare a simple, effective message. Doctor! Doctor, you're fading away, both of you!
Oh, my word. Well, it's up to you, Jamie!
And he was gone. And so was Zoe and all the people who had been watching us. It was just me, the leaders of this place, and the bunch of rebels we'd led up here. Even Mrs. Oakley had gone.
Right. We don't have time for me to stand here explaining what just happened. I wasn't even sure I understood myself just what happened. But I understood what I had to do. That old man who stands on the podium down there and makes your announcements, where is he?
He's not real, said Mr. Beaton. He's a computer program.
But could you send an image of a real person down in his place?
Well, yes, but...
Right. Whatever bits of kit you need to do that, bring it all up here.
Mr. Beaton went off to get it. Miss Petzl spoke to me.
What are you going to do?
Well, talk to the people. Tell them there's something better out there. It's the only thing that'll save them.
Why should they believe you? You're new here. No one knows who you are.
Does everybody know who you are?
Somebody's got to see this.
Wait. What if we stage a sort of revolution with us toppling the government first? Before you do your bit about a better world, they could see us interrupting state business, storming the chamber. They'll take you seriously then.
Well, that'll be just another lie.
People will believe it, though. It fits with how you see things. They'll listen to someone who can show them that.
By now, Mr. Beaton had come back and was setting up two cameras, one on either side of me. Miss Petzl knew this place and the people better than I did. Maybe her plan was better. I don't think I've ever made such a difficult choice. But I said, no. She looked annoyed.
But this is too important to...
I'm going on there to ask people to trust me. I'm not going to do a wee bit of play-acting first.
But it's true, really. We are taking control. It's just about how we present that in a way that people will believe.
We'll present it how it is, and people will believe it or they won't. Mr. Beaton, I'm ready to talk to them.
Hello? hearing me. Oh, right. You don't know me. My name's Jamie McCrimmon. I'm new here. Now, there's going to be a disaster in a few hours. A meteorite's going to destroy this city and everyone here will die. The people who could have prevented it, they've all disappeared. They're in another city, like this one, but better. You can go there too if you want to. But you have to stop thinking there's nothing worth having and that everything's a trick and it's not worth trying. The idea of it might scare you. I know it did me. The first time I saw the future and it was all full of strange machines and words I didn't understand. But then I realized these things are only as good or bad as the people who use them. You've lost the things that'll save you. We've got to find them again. Right, I'm done.
I didn't know if it was enough. Should have kept talking. Would that have helped? Maybe it'd just make things worse. Then I started to see the other city again. And the doctor.
Well, I've done it, but I don't know if it'll work. We're holding the two cities in phase as long as we can. I wish there was some way we could show the people who can't see.
Let me talk to them again.
Can you see it? The other place? You can go there now. You just have to want to. But if there's anyone with you who can't see it, tell them what you can see. Tell them as much as you can, so they know you're not making it up.
Well done, Jamie. Is it enough?
I don't know. No, the meteorite's only going to be in range for about 20 minutes, and the missile will take time to get there. It has to be now.
As the doctor was talking, the city faded. But not the city I'd been in. The other one. I was there with the doctor. Then Zoe ran over to us.
Doctor, according to my life sign readings, we've got 4,244,909 on our side, and they've got 3,800,000...
Yes, Zoe, very encouraging, but the proof will rather be in the pudding, won't it?
They're launching now. We can watch it from the hub. Come on.
We went down in a lift, raced through the city, and ended up back in the room which, in the other city, had been the rebel HQ. But here it was back, being used as a military facility, full of people in blue uniforms. Zoe shouted to one of them.
Major Worth!
And she went over to talk to him. They've got an army on this side.
Yes. Yes, they've had to rebuild from scratch, but they've managed to assemble a serviceable defence system, including missiles.
Will they work? Hopefully. They've never used them before, you see.
Oh.
There it is.
On the screens, we could see the meteorite hurtling to Earth and the missile heading towards it.
Yes, well, fingers crossed.
Zoe stood between me and the doctor, holding hands with us both. But we all kept our eyes fixed on that screen. Afterwards, we saw the others briefly. Mrs. Oakley had found her husband. Miss Petzl couldn't believe where she was. She looked like all her birthdays had come at once. Mr. Neenan, well, we never saw him. Probably still back in the other city. But while the celebrations were going on, we slipped away and headed back to the TARDIS. It was in the same street where we left it, only here, not there.
Yes, well, it didn't belong to the other city, a glorious machine like the TARDIS. The first chance it got, it went somewhere it felt more at home.
It's a remarkable place. They've done incredible things here, with no support.
Yes, well, I hope they keep it that way. It could all go back to the way it was. In fact, they could slip back through to their other city, the one with no future.
Should we not warn them?
It's their own choice, Jamie. You can save them from disaster, but... We can't save them from themselves.
Hello, I'm David Richardson. I'm the producer of The Companion Chronicles, and I'm here with Fraser Hines.
Hello.
Fraser, Jamie, hello.
I'm still here. Yeah.
Lisa Bauman, who's the director.
Good afternoon.
Now, Fraser, did you know that you're one of the very, very, very most popular readers for The Companion Chronicles? I saw a poll and you were right at the top.
No,
people
where?
People love your Companion Chronicles.
Oh, I've got to read. Well, you've got to show it to me. Yeah, I'd love to see. Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah. Now, do you enjoy doing them still?
Oh, I do. Oh, yeah. You have to enjoy them. You know, you can't just think, well, I'll come in and do it. No, yeah. I think you have to get into it. You've got to throw yourself into it and do it. It's no point just thinking, well, I'll just come and do it.
Mm. How do you prepare for them?
Well, when you send me the script, I read it first of all, and then I read it again, and I mark where the Doctor speaks, in blue for TARDIS. When Jamie speaks, red for the kilt. And anybody else, it's kind of, you know, if it's Zoe's voice or somebody else's voice, you know, yellow, for kind of a female colour. So when I'm reading down the page, because a lot of, so probably the listeners, some people think I do all the voices, one, you know, all Jamie's voice, then all the Doctor's. But no, if it's on the page, the Doctor, Jamie, Doctor, Jamie, Doctor, it's a blue line and the red line and blue, and then maybe a little yellow for somebody else.
And some people would choose to do it that way, wouldn't they? They'd do all of one character together and then all of the other, and we do
no, I'd rather just, it gets a bit of a, you know, I'd rather have a flow on it like that. And you because it keeps the energy up as well. Mm. If you do all it one way, then all the other, it's difficult to remember how your energy level was. If I did all the Doctors now, then we broke for lunch, then I do the, how was the Doctor? Oh, how was he? You know, it's, no, I'd rather do all in one. And, you know, if you're having an argument with the Doctor, fine. You know, it's hard work, but it's, you know, it's good fun.
You must feel slightly bonkers when you finish the day having
Well, this script in particular, because, I mean, normally, you know, the Doctor's fine, Jamie's fine. If there's a other character, like the Salation Gambit, there was definite characters like, you know, Salation and the old lady and the bank manager. But this one, there's so many members of the council all kind of, you know, all sounding the same, you know.
See, the problem we have is you're so good, we're now writing to the fact you're so... Seriously, I mean, we're actually... We find we're pushing it and pushing it. So your job's getting more and more challenging, I think.
Oh, yeah, right, Kerry.
But isn't it, when you listen back to something like, say, The Salation Gambit, it does sound like a complete world, doesn't it? I mean,
well,
it's just...
That's the other thing. When you send me the CD, I never listen to it at home because the phone will ring. I always make sure I'm going a long car journey, and I stick it in there. And when I heard The Salation Gambit, I thought, Oh, that's me. Oh, that's me. Oh, that's me. And in the end, I thought, there's only Annika. And if you'd bought me a tight pair of jeans, I could have done Annika's body voice as well. It would cost Jason just 50 quid for a pair of tight jeans.
Lisa, can you believe it? When he was listening to The Salation Gambit in his car and rang me up and asked for more money.
He didn't.
He did. Well, do you remember that?
I realised because there was eight voices and I was doing seven of them. And it's seven out of the eight.
Shocking. Well, we finished early today and we're paying by the hour now.
He's such
we get you back.
We really shouldn't allow these professionals in their photos.
I know. I know. And Lisa.
Hello.
You've been the butt of Fraser's jokes all day.
Well, I'm sort of in...
They're all unrepeatable.
And I won't say a very nice butt either.
I'm almost impervious to them now, to the point where I actually don't see them coming. And if I do see them coming, I'm going to get... All right, walk straight into that one. I see. Fine.
Oh yeah.
I'm still troubled by the... What was it? Old and rusty. What was that one?
There was a tarnished old and rusty thing. Yeah. I'm talking to Lisa about.
Yeah. I'm wounded.
Hoping we had that on tape.
Most of them around me.
Have you always been like that, Fred?
Only with Lisa.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, cheers.
I thought so.
No, I take the mickey out of Deborah Watling as well. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm in good company. Jolly good.
And when you were doing the TV series, were you like that with your directors?
Well, no. The
you wouldn't have any women directors on.
We had one, Paddy Russell.
Oh, right, okay.
And when we had the Evil of the Daleks.
Gosh.
For goodness sake, grow up, you two boys. You know, boys, oh.
Those are the days. Things don't change that much.
And back to Lisa. What are your plans for this one in post-production?
I like this one. It's a good, straightforward story. We're liking that. The parallel universe, it's a kind of a whole new take on the parallel universe. It's going to... I haven't really...
It's sometimes things come to you in post-production, you think, especially with the transfer of the two cities. I think we can come up with something exciting for that. What I love about this, and I think we're capitalising on the fact that Fraser is damn good at doing Patrick Troughton. Mm. And it is almost... I was listening to some of it. It was uncanny. It was, oh, my God, that's just... I couldn't have told the difference. It was brilliant.
No, well,
and I love
no.
that. It gives, and, yeah. and actually, as Fraser was saying, because, as it were, and he's going to run with this one, because he's sort of playing with himself as it is in situ. Here we go. The energy level is really, really good. And I think that also portrays just how much energy Patrick Troughton used to put into it. And I think the script really helps, you know, brings that out.
Yeah.
I love it.
I found that with The Rose Mariners, actually, which is one of the lost stories, which was... When we were listening to the edit, I actually couldn't tell the difference.
No, it's extraordinary. Don't tell him that.
No, I was...
Well, David Warner said a very nice
thing.
Oh,
yeah, he was very...
And David, you know, very kind. He really thought that Patrick was next door.
Oh, yeah, he thought it was amazing.
And to get an accolade from something like David Warner, that was wonderful for me, because he's one of our peers, one of our greatest actors.
Yes. And do you ever have any thoughts of what you'd like to see us do with Jamie? Is there anything you've ever wanted to do?
No, I mean, everything you do. I'd like to have another Glorious Revolution sort of story set in his own time, or around about, because he really then, it's not spaceships and things, he knows what he's talking about. And I think that's when he kind of has a good argument with the Doctor, because he knows where he is and what he's talking about. Not to say I don't like the space stories, but, you know...
I thought he was going to say, like, a love interest, didn't you? I don't know.
Oh, you trick there.
Well, that's another thing. Yes, yes, Jamie could have a love interest as well. Yeah.
He never has he? He's never really...
No.
Has he not?
Not for Big Finish.
No. Never been kissed. No.
Well, having said that, in Knight's Black Agents, he had a little penchant for the lady in that.
Oh, he did.
It was never quite requited, though.
No, because she was after...
She married to the slightly disgusting monk or whatever.
Right, yes. There we go. There's a challenge for the next one. Jamie in love.
Oh, good Lord.
Marvellous. Well, thank you very much, everybody.
Oh, great. Lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.